Once upon a time, in a land far, far away, by which fairy tale setting I mean Langley, Virginia, on Saturday, the President of the United States gathered a room full of CIA employees and his own bust-in peanut gallery and started telling his usual series of lies. Friday's inauguration crowd stretched to the Washington Monument, he claimed. Not true. He had no rift with the intelligence community, he claimed. Also not true. On the contrary, Trump not only ridiculed their competency, he compared them to Nazis. Trump, who had been president at that point less than 24 hours, even lied about Friday's weather.
When I first started, I said, oh, no. First line, I got hit by a couple of drops. And I said, oh, this is too bad, but we'll go right through it. But the truth is that it stopped immediately. It was amazing. And then it became really sunny.
But what tied those lies together is Trump's lie, that he is the blameless victim of a monolithic media conspiring to portray him in an unflattering light.
They are among the most dishonest human beings on earth.
I'll leave the pop psychology to you. What mattered was that the president explicitly claimed to be at war with the media. The first skirmish was Saturday morning. By Saturday afternoon, the administration had already commenced the second battle of bullshit run, a tirade against the media by Press Secretary Sean Spicer.
Yesterday, at a time when our nation and the world was watching the peaceful transition of power, and as the president said, the transition in the balance of power from Washington to the citizens of the United States, some members of the media were engaged in deliberately false reporting.
Before he finished, he himself presented bogus statistics about the inaugural turnout, along the way accusing the media of excessively challenging the president. Never mind that the press's First Amendment role is precisely to challenge elected officials. Then came a vague threat.
There's been a lot of talk in the media about the responsibility to hold Donald Trump accountable. And I'm here to tell you that it goes two ways. We're going to hold the press accountable as well.
And then things really got surreal. Confronted the next day by Chuck Todd on NBC's Meet the Press, presidential counselor Kellyanne Conway went positively Orwellian.
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts? Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. The
hey,
one
Chuck,
thing he
why?
Got right
hey, Chuck.
Was Zeke Miller. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
In other words, not just a war with the media, but a war with reality itself. On Monday, a markedly less bellicose Sean Spicer charmingly fielded 42 questions from the press. But once again, when the subject turned to his weekend tantrum, he articulated what can be described as a fundamental hostility to the press's role as proxy for the electorate to get answers and accountability from those in power, not to fulfill the president's PR agenda. In an exchange with CNN's Jim Acosta, whom Trump had disparaged a week earlier as a purveyor of fake news, Spicer, well, he whined about the ceaseless negativity of the reporting.
Always got to be negative, Jim. Some days we do the right thing. Some days we are successful. So it's part of this is saying when we're right, say we're right. When we're wrong, say we're wrong. But it's not always wrong and negative. There's a lot of things that he's done already, a lot of amazing people he's appointed, a lot of success that he's having. And it would be once in a while for someone just to say, report it straight up. He appointed this person, here's their background, not why they're not going to get nominated, not why it's not going to happen.
In point of fact, the press has dutifully covered every single Trump statement, every single meeting, every single executive order, every single policy decision, and yes, the ebb and flow of every cabinet nominee's confirmation process. The focus on lies and on trivia and on presidential invective can be pinned on only one person, the president himself. But here's the thing. Spicer is wrong about a lot more than the size of the inauguration audience. Accountability does not go both ways, even if the media have been unfair to Trump, and by and large, they have not been. tough noogies. We owe nothing to the government whatsoever. What we owe to the public is not neutrality, balance, or official stenography. It is merely truth. Is Donald Trump the first president to have a really bad honeymoon? Why, no, he is not. Martha Joynt Kumar, director of the White House Transition Project, is a retired professor of political science at Towson University and author of several books on the presidency, including Managing the President's Message. Martha, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sean Spicer, the press secretary, and I think all of his predecessors have articulated the point of view that it's their responsibility to articulate the president's program for the American people through the press. But they all seem to be kind of blindsided by the idea that the press's role is not just to be a conduit for their PR, that they have some questions to ask. And this is true of, it seems, every incoming administration.
Mostly they are surprised, although some who have had previous experience on the Hill or as governors are more used to dealing with the press on a regular basis. Now, Donald Trump is the first president who has come in and has not had elected office, and so he is not used to the kind of criticism that one gets as an elected official. And that's hard to get used to.
I was looking at some research done by the Center for Media and Public Affairs, which is a kind of conservatively skewed, albeit nonpartisan, think tank. And they did a content analysis of the first year of press coverage of Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton. None of those presidents achieved so much as 40% positive coverage in print or on TV by the lights of the researchers. So while what we may be seeing in scale is perhaps a little more severe than past presidencies, it's not in and of itself unusual.
It depends on what it is the president is doing and how active the president is in policy. With Clinton, you had a lot of stories that dealt with his cabinet picks. He had trouble getting an attorney general. So there were a lot of bad stories about his picks. Gerald Ford was a president who got good publicity at the beginning, but then when he pardoned former President Nixon, that led to a lot of criticism. At the same time, Ford was not bothered by criticism in the same way that many presidents have been, because he had been the minority leader in the House, and he was used to criticism there, but he also was used to dealing with reporters, and he knew that they were serious about their jobs.
One thing that is singular, let's just say, about the Trump presidency is that he campaigned against the press. He characterized the media as
dishonest,
as an enemy, and further has made the charge that the press is conspiring as a monolith to delegitimize him. Has any previous president, even Nixon, entered office having so clearly drawn battle lines?
Nixon drew battle lines because he felt that the press had been against him when he had run against John Kennedy in 1960. He was ready to do battle in a way, not so much rhetorically, but rather he thought at the beginning about whether he should have a press secretary at all, and then decided that he would. But at the same time, he created an Office of Communication. They developed a list for various kinds of ethnic press. They would single out business so that they would be able to carry their message in a targeted way to audiences that they thought would be more friendly to them. he had an organizational approach that involved persuasion. And then on the dark side, when things got rough in the Watergate period, he had an enemies list of reporters that they thought were against them.
I want to ask you about the gigantic elephant in the room here, and that's the surreal nature of the campaign and the presidency to date, namely the many outright lies told by the president and passed along by his various spokespeople. And I just imagine in what universe he thinks that calling out a lie is unfair or crooked or slimy or anything of the like, and how Sean Spicer can be so confounded by what's going on.
I think he has his own reality, and presidents will sometimes believe things that aren't true. Reagan used to choose his facts that were favorable ones. He would get them from Reader's Digest.
Oh, the killer trees that were poisoning the environment with carbon dioxide.
Yes. I remember a wonderful sign where when he was campaigning, there was a guy that had a costume of a tree, and it said, "Cut me down before I kill again." You have to look at different types of lies. These, in a way, are small matters. In Nixon's case, they were very consequential. And Lyndon Johnson lied about the Gulf of Tonkin incident and about the attacks on the American ship Turner Joy, which also came ultimately to haunt him. One of the problems here is that if you have your press secretary at that White House podium give information that is not accurate, then their credibility is damaged. And what happens then is that reporters seek alternate sources of information. And those sources can include, and you can see it in the Post and Times articles, staff members in the White House who speak anonymously, and then people on the Hill, whether it's members of Congress or staff members. So the story that one is going to get in the alternate places is not going to be as favorable as the one that they would get if they believed what it was the press secretary was saying.
Over the weekend, Sean Spicer fulminated about press unfairness and conspiracy to undermine the new administration. It was as if he had come to a costume party dressed as Trump's id.
Well, you want a press secretary to reflect the thinking and also the temperament of the president, because most days you're not going to get that close to the president. I want to see a press secretary who comes out there and gives you a feel for what the president not only is saying, but what he is thinking. Jody Powell, when he was press secretary, was a marvelous reflection of President Carter. He knew him very well. When they were first running and their campaign wasn't very well funded, they used to share a room. So Jody knew Carter's thinking, but also a sense of how he was responding emotionally to something. So we want that in a press secretary, but at the same time, we also want a straight story.
On Monday, even after having been bullied and disparaged, the press corps was not overtly hostile. Their questions about the president's activities of Monday and over the weekend were not even inherently hostile. They were simply, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way, stenographic. They were asking what the president had done and what he's going to do and writing down the answers. Even when they were talking to Spicer about his weekend tantrum, they did so with respect, without attitude. They were far better behaved than I would have been in the same situation.
Well, if you're a reporter covering a beat, you cannot really afford to be disrespectful. Why get into an argument? Just ask your questions and do follow-ups. And I don't think that anger or disrespect is going to get you anywhere in terms of your goal of getting information.
All right. You've studied a lot of presidencies and the chief executive's relationship with the press. Do you have a sense that discipline will ever arrive?
I think he is not used to the kind of criticism that comes with elected office. And it takes time to build up that thick skin. And many presidents don't ever build it up. But what they learn to do is to keep it in close quarters with their family and close aides.
Martha, thank you very, very much.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Martha Joynt Kumar is director of the White House Transition Project and author of, among other books, Managing the President's Message. You've been listening to an On the Media podcast extra. You can follow On the Media on Twitter and Facebook, and you should, because both feeds are a very good source of info for all things that fall in our wheelhouse. I'm Bob Garfield.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.